I want to talk about a character in the Bible this morning, and I want to give you a few clues, and I want the school children to be listening and raise your hand when you figure out who we're going to be talking about, and raise it high. And, you know, I've been in school already, and I remember when I was in school and the teacher would start asking a question, and when I was in public school in the lower grades, there was like 25 in the class, and we want the teacher to see us, and so we would really wave our hands, and the others, you know, would be waving too, but we want to, so feel free to raise your hand high. But we want to talk about, the man we're going to talk about was found in the water early in his life, and he went up on a mountain at the end of his life, just before he died. Do I see any hands yet? Any hands starting? Yeah, they're starting to come up. And he was buried in a valley. Any more hands coming up? But nobody knows where he was buried. And he lived to be 120 years old. We know who it is. Who are we talking about? Yes, sir. Carter. Moses, yes. Thank you. I don't know why my computer's so slow, but I got a floppy disk, I think. But I know your name. I want to talk about Moses. Another thing about Moses says that Numbers 12 said he was more meek than anyone on the earth. Now, adults, do you think Moses started his life the spiritual giant that he ended his life? His story is beautiful. Of being born in a time, the story is beautiful, but he was born in a time of oppression for the descendants of Abraham. The Egyptians, we know the story how that Isaac's family came and Jacob and started in Israel and in Egypt, and they grew and they multiplied until finally the Egyptians were worried that these people would become more powerful than they were. It was interesting to study a little bit of history, and back over 150, 180 years ago, maybe, when Mexico still owned Texas, there were a lot of opportunities in Texas, and there were a lot of people from the United States moving to Texas, which is owned by Mexico, and Mexico made a rule, a law, that no more people from the United States could move into Texas. Now, isn't that interesting? But they're worried about there would be too many people and they would have more political power than the Mexicans in the state of Texas. Well, this is what was happening in Egypt. Pharaoh got worried about it, and the Israelites were under bondage, and they were serving and working hard, but they still kept increasing. And finally, Pharaoh told the midwives, said, "Well, you kill the little baby boys." And went on a while, and I guess he saw baby boys still growing up. And so he called the midwives into question and said, "Well, these ladies they're fast. Before we get there, the babies are born." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what, then you throw them in the river." Can you imagine what that would be like? And there was a mom and a dad, Amram and Jochebed, that had a little baby. Can you imagine what that would have been like? You children that have a little baby in your family, think about it. What it had been like to know that the king said, "This little baby boy has to be thrown into the river." Well, they hid their little baby Moses for 3 months. Tried to keep him quiet. You know how hard it is to keep a baby quiet? Yeah, you know. And by the time they get 3 months, pretty difficult, isn't it? Finally figured out, Jochebed figured out, we have to do something. So she made that little tiny basket and put Moses in the basket, and took the basket down to the river. Well, the king said, "Put the baby in the river." So that's what she did, but she just had him in a tiny little basket. And so Big Sister stayed close by to watch, to see what would happen. And it happened that, I'm just telling you a little bit of the story, and we'll get into the meat of it in a little bit. But Miriam, Moses' big sister, stood there to watch, see what happened, and here comes Pharaoh's daughter. And all at once, "Hey, hear a baby cry. Where is the baby? You know how babies cry? Moses was probably hungry, was thirsty, he was wanting mama. And they found the baby in the little basket in the water, in the ark. And got the baby out. I'm sure they were cooing, and, you know, like young girls do over babies. And here comes Miriam, big sister. Said, would you like me to get a maid of one of the Israelite women to take care of this little baby? And Pharaoh's daughter, yes. She knew it was too much for her to take care of. And so Miriam runs home to her mother, Moses' own mother. And Jochebed comes and gets her own little baby and takes him home. And got paid to take care of her own little boy. But in the process of time, she had to take Moses to Pharaoh's daughter. And I don't know how old he was. But eventually she had to take Moses to Pharaoh's daughter, and Moses became her son. Now turn with me to Hebrews 11. I want to read 24 through 29. I've given you most of the story up until this point. Hebrews 11, 24 through 29. Through 29. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were drowned. I told you already that Moses lived to be 120 years old. For the first 40 years of his life, he learned to be a somebody. You know what I mean by that? He really thinks he's somebody. Have you ever heard that? Talking about somebody that you think they're kind of puffed up and proud a little bit. Well, Moses, he learned to be a somebody the first 40 years. He was there in the king's house. He was raised by the king's daughter. His grandpa was Pharaoh under this arrangement. And he was there living with all the wealth of the king. You can imagine in settings like this, there's usually a lot of partying going on. He was the upper crust. He had what money could buy. He had it all there. We usually think of people raised in this kind of a situation as having pleasure. Just, you know, whatever you want. You want it, and you want it now. Instant gratification. So this is what Moses would have been raised in, but still somehow realizing he was kin to the slaves. Seemed to be something in him. He learned to be a somebody in that time. He saw the mistreatment. And finally, he killed the Egyptian. An Egyptian was hurting one of his people, mistreating him somehow. And Moses killed the man and buried him. He was up about 40 years old. The next day, he saw another dispute, and it was among two of his own people, the Israelites, and he went to settle it, and the one of them kind of smarted him off, said, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to do to us what you did to the man yesterday? And Moses thought he had hid that where nobody knew about it, and he knew he had to leave. He could not be around anymore. So, skipping the country, he headed to Midian to escape the wrath of the king, living there as the king's daughter's child, even heir to the throne. He knew that it wasn't safe anymore because he was identified with his own people. So he came to the prince of Midian and kept his sheep and married this man's daughter, Zipporah, and for 40 years wandered on the backside of the desert. And I wish somehow we could all go out to Deming and go on a ride out in the desert. And then imagine, the only thing that's really hard to do is because there are nice roads through the desert that they didn't have back in Moses' time and when he was keeping sheep. And when you get off the road and back in the desert, it is a forsaken, undesirable place to live. If you're just out there, I guess he just had tents, nomads. You don't want to live out there. There's all kinds of varmints out there. There are all kinds of snakes out there. It's hot as everything in the daytime and gets cool to cold at night. And there was Moses. And he had time to think. And so the next 40 years of his life, he learned to be a nobody. Just Moses out there hiding in the backside of the desert, keeping sheep. We know what happened to the burning bush, his fear, his excuses, and finally agreed to go back to Israel, go back to Egypt, to the children of Israel. Remember what God told him when he started making excuses, and God told him, well, throw your rod down. You remember what happened? It turned into a snake. Pretty common sight out there on the desert. And Moses was like me. He was scared of them. Didn't like them. And what did God say? Pick it up by the tail. And Moses did. Moses had to get a hold of his fears and trust God above his fears. And that's one of the lessons we can learn from this, not necessarily one that we're just about to get into. But he finally went back after a number of excuses, and I didn't outline these excuses. But one thing that did amaze me, and I'm sure I've said it before here, on about the last excuse, I think it was number 5. It was not even an excuse, but he told God he wouldn't do it. And he called him Master Sovereign. He called him what he called him, if you look at the way it's spelled, L, capital L, lowercase O-R-D, that is Adonai, which means Master Sovereign. Moses said, Master Sovereign, send somebody else. And you know what happened? That's the time God got angry at him. And I wonder how many times I've done that. God, Master, I love you. I want to serve you. I'll do anything you say, but send somebody else. Well, we know the story, how Aaron came and they went back, and the plagues, finally the Passover, crossing the Red Sea, wandering in the wilderness, smiting the rock, being barred from Canaan, going up the mountain to the top of Pisgah and viewing the land with God by his side. I can hardly imagine that. Moses, who lived all those last 40 years to get the people across into the promised land, and God said no. And he'd asked God about it. I think Bruce just pointed this out recently to me. And finally God told him, he must have told him more, ask about it more than once. And God said, I don't want you to ask again. But I'll take you up to the mountain and you can look over. This is the land I promised Abraham, but you can't enter. And he died and was buried by God. I don't know how that happened. Can you imagine Moses on the mountain talking to God, and all at once, I'm guessing he just laid down, closed his eyes, and he was gone. He died. And God carried him down in the valley and buried him. Well, now, that's the brief account of the man. What can we learn from him? Now, to our passage. Look in verse 25. And this is point number one. If you're taking notes, you've got seven little points. They'll be easy to write down. But number one, what can we learn from Moses' life? Number one is make right choices. That's so easy to say, isn't it? But children in school, you can do it. When your teacher gives you an assignment and you don't feel like doing it, you have a choice. You have a choice to sit there and look out the window to think about what you want to do at recess, and I'm going to do what I'm told. Your parents give you an assignment, and you choose. You can choose whether you're going to be happy or not. Make right choices. Verse 25 says, Moses, he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. You remember his first 40 years of life and how he lived. And he had to come to a point where he chose what was he going to do. And he chose rather to endure trouble with God's people than to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin. And don't take this passage where it talks about the pleasures of sin for a season. The emphasis is not on the pleasure. The emphasis is on how fast it passes. It passes so quickly. And that's what I want us to remember. Children, youth, adults, all through life, we have choices to make. And the passing pleasures of sin. And many of our new translations bring that out that way. Rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. That kind of seems to change the emphasis just a little bit. But think about it. How quickly the pleasures of sin, the pleasure of sin, yeah, there's a certain pleasure in sin for a moment. But I want you to think about it, how fast it's gone. How many times people turn to alcohol, to drugs, to sex, vaping, all kinds of things that bring just a moment of pleasure. And look what happens, how quickly it's gone, and there's reaping for a lifetime. And I beg us from the youngest to the oldest to think about the choices that we're making. Use logic and reasoning. You know, God gave us a brain. God doesn't tell us everything exactly in his book, okay, you know, what you have to do. But he's given us principles to live by. And he's given us logic and reasoning. We can think. Young men, when you get in your car and you drive down the road, think. If you drive 100 miles an hour, what's going to happen? I'll tell you one thing will happen if State Patrol comes by, you'll probably spend the night where you don't want, where's not, the bed's not real good. If you have an accident and kill somebody, you'll be charged with involuntary manslaughter. I'm just saying, use logic and reasoning and think. If you take up friendships with ungodly people, what's going to happen? If you start caving into the lust of your flesh, what's going to happen? Where is it going to lead you? And so be like Moses and make right choices. Choosing rather to suffer affliction, to endure trouble with the people of God, than to enjoy those passing pleasures of sin that pass away so soon. Many a person, if they could have come back. So make right choices. There are so many choices for everybody to make. And thank God we have a lot of good choices we can choose from even. One of the things, I don't know, maybe this is a rabbit trail off of number one, making right choices. But I was thinking as I was meditating this morning, I was thinking about, I wonder if our greatest hindrance to kingdom living today, if it might be affluence. We have so many choices with the blessings that God has given to us. We so easily determine, and all this I'm talking about choices, but we so easily determine our standard of living. And I'm not talking about just this audience of 119 people here, but our people in general, Anabaptists, if you want to, we'll just broaden it out to Anabaptist people, and I think it's true of everybody around the world, actually. But as far as Christianity, we so easily determine our standard of living by what we can afford, rather than kingdom principles. We set our lifestyle by what we can afford rather than kingdom principles. And I'm just going back to make right choices. And I'll start down here with the young people again. Make right choices. You make, when you get to where you can get on a job and you make more money than your forefathers made probably in weeks. And so you have a lot more money. Make right choices with it. We're so blessed. We're able to. Clock's going to win again, but we're going to keep going. We're so blessed to be able to, live in a good place and a good job. And, you know, we've been exempt from Social Security, so we save 15%. And then when medical insurance came along and said, well, you people that, and I should say that, in case you don't understand it, this Social Security was a system so that you would be taken care of when you get to be old and get our age and retire. Then you have some income. But our forefathers said, no, we'll take care of ourselves. We'll take care of our own elderly. And so we were exempt, 15%. Well, then when he came along to the insurance, we were told, well, if you're Social Security exempt, you don't have to get public insurance because you'll take care of yourself. So when you take all that, and we just heard some about this recently, but I couldn't help but just bring it in here on our choices as we learn, as we grow. It's so easy to raise our lifestyle and make choices that lift our lifestyle, and we forget about the responsibility of taking care of our elderly when people can't. I don't think it's God's plan for us to get to a certain age and just quit working and pick up a fishing pole and go fishing. We work, we go till we're gone. But when that happens, then we said we'll take care of each other. And we take care. So and I want to mention yet too the privilege of being able to do that. We should see it as God's people as a privilege to be able to help each other in a time of need, not as a burden, not, well, I wish I wouldn't have to get off all this money. Anyway, that's probably way too far on the first point of making right choices, but it was on my heart this morning. Number two is an extension of number one. Choose to be with your people. Moses forsook the king's palace and being heir to the throne. Look at verse 26. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Be with your family, your people, and the church family. These are your people. It should thrill our hearts to come together this morning with our people. It should bring... is it okay to say excitement? And to where we love each other. I appreciated so much what was shared this morning. I forget it, was it Sunday school, after Sunday school, or something about the way it's always been. You know, we're saved by the blood of Christ and we're clean and perfect in God's sight because of the blood of Jesus. But we're here in our humanity trying to work through the things of life. Paul made mistakes. And Simon makes mistakes. And whoever comes after me will make mistakes. But we work together by the principles of our Master Jesus to work through the issues of life and what we do with our mistakes. But these are our people. Love your people. Choose to be with your people. We don't talk about them and they. It's us. Be like Moses. He chose to be with his people rather than all that stuff that he could have had in Egypt. Number three, again, is another extension. It's love your people. Moses gave the rest of his life for the good of these people. Moses gave the last 40 years of his life for the good of the people that he led out. Even when they murmured against him, they complained against him, and they were just, I don't know. They gossiped about him, turned their back on him, but Moses loved them. And I think, you remember, I've told you before that love is a commitment of the will for the good of another. And that's what Moses had for his people. Love isn't returning good after someone has been nice to you. That's not love. Anybody can do that. Love is returning good when somebody has wronged you. And yes, so I say love your people, your family, your church family. Make your people better people because of your life for God. Don't live your life just trying to protect yourself, but live your life with an outward thrust of how can I be a blessing to the people of God? How can I be an encouragement and learn and grow and be a blessing to others? So love your people. Number four is listen to others' counsel. Jethro advised, you remember the story, when Moses took the children of Israel out. Evidently, Zipporah had gone back to her dad and mom. And finally, after they were out, Jethro brought Moses' wife to him. And they got together in the evening. It seems like they had a good time visiting and catching up on all the events. And the next day, the people started coming to Moses, and all day he was just completely snowed under with people just bombarding him with this and that. And Jethro said, Moses, you need to get help. You're not going to make it. You're going to wear away. And what did Moses do? He listened. He hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law. May I tell you all, we need to listen to the counsel of godly parents, godly ministers, neighbors, friends, brothers. We all, the ministry needs to listen to the brotherhood. The brotherhood needs to listen to ministry. We must work together. We must take counsel. I believe that taking counsel is evidence of an humble spirit. And an humble spirit God will not despise. And you will never come to the potential of what God has for you if you don't take heed to the counsel of others. And that's true for Christians, old ones, young ones. Even a king does much better when he takes counsel from others. Listen to counsel of others. Number five is listen to God's voice. And I want to say here that five is listening to God's voice. And sometimes number four, which is listen to others' counsel, is listening to God's voice. Sometimes God speaks to us through others. But here I'm talking about taking time to hear the quiet voice of God speak in your heart and soul and give direction to your life. We need to take time. And all of us, young, old, we need to have quiet time with God. We're living in such a fast-paced society where we can always just turn on some music or we can have some kind of something going on. Somewhere in your life, you need to regularly have quiet time with God where God speaks to your heart. Quietness is to the soul what rest is to the body. Do you remember that? I've known of people that wanted to do away with, they just, like, rest was a waste of time. They had so many things to do, and it won't work. And if you don't take quiet time, if you don't find a quiet time to be with God, it won't work either. Let God speak into your heart and give direction to your life. Moses was regularly hearing from God. Twice up the mountain, listening to what God had for him. So I say, take time for quiet time to listen. You know, one thing about Moses, we're talking about listening to God and speaking. I don't believe Moses had a rule-based life. Do you think so? You know, I don't know how Moses kept up with everything that God told him of all the measurements for the tabernacle and all the offerings. I have no idea. He must have had a super brain. You would have thought he would have had to have a computer and a spreadsheet and I don't know what all to keep all those things at the right time. But was Moses bound and restricted where he could hardly operate because of, you know, Moses had a heart for God. And that's what we need. And he was concerned to do what God wanted him to do. And that's where we must start. Have a concern that we do what God wants us to do from our heart. And so I'm going to tell you one and all, don't live a rule-based life. Now, stick with me on that. I think we live in respect to what, to the decisions that we've made. And that's good and that's right and it's necessary. It's all a part of balancing out what I told you up above this. But I think over and above everything that we've ever decided as brethren here should be our desire to serve God. And when that is first and foremost, to serve God, then we don't look at these rules that we've made. And if there's nothing said about it, well, we can do it then. Or if there is said something said about it, we can get around it. But when you live a life where you want to please God, it makes it so much different. And it's so easier to live your life. And then you can back up to the others. Listen to counsel. You will love your people. You'll choose to be with your people. You want to make right choices. Listen to God's voice. And number six is obey God. Lessons from Moses. And I guess we would say every time. Obey God every time. There were so many, many times that Moses obeyed. It almost doesn't seem fair, like we heard about in the devotion, does it? Moses messed up one time and he couldn't get over in that promised land. God told him that children of Israel were fussing, they were thirsty, they were murmuring, and Moses is like, God, did I bring these people to life that I'm need to carry them out? And God said, go speak to the rock. I can easily believe Moses was a little bit frustrated. I can think he would be. And he went, and you know what he did, children? What did he do? God told him to speak to the rock. You know what he did? I guess he used his rod. And he smote the rock, hit the rock. And he pulled back and hit it again. And what did God told him to do? Speak to it. Wouldn't that have been something if Moses would have just walked out there and he would have just said, water, come forth. And water would have come. That's what God told him to do. But he disobeyed. And it cost him so greatly, and it will cost us every time. When God tells us something in the Word, then we need to live it. We need to obey it. We need to do it, even when it's increasingly unpopular. I think of the Holy Kiss. And now it seems like it's, in so many places, it's being lost. Somebody asked me about it recently, and I was like, it still says it five times in the epistles. It's no different than it was when I was a boy. Same words. And I want to mention, too, that God's commands are not grievous. They're not burdensome. They're not like a weight on your back that, I wish I could get my chores done, get over this. No, not at all. They're for our good. Things that God told us are for our good. Never forget that. We're so privileged to be able to serve Him. His commandments are for our good. And we will be filled and satisfied when we take His way, when we choose His way. And young people, and I've mentioned young people a lot this morning. I guess it's because I love you and I think about, well, maybe 50 more years in your life and where you might be and all the choices that you'll have. But if you choose to take God's way, you'll be filled and satisfied. But if you don't take His way, it'll let you empty and restless. You'll never have a satisfying life. Choose to obey God every time. And the last one is have faith in God. The 28th verse in 29 says that through faith He kept the Passover. Through faith He kept the Passover. You remember where they were in the story when they were all the plagues, and this was going to be the grand finale. And God said, you put blood on the doorposts and on the lintel, and then I will pass through and I'll kill all the firstborn. But wherever I see the blood, I will, what's the word? Anybody help me out on it? What's the word? I will, what did God say? I will pass over. A little bit like flying out to New Mexico last week. We were way up high, 36,000 feet. And we could look down and just the little interstates looked like to be something that if you put your little matchbox truck on, it would fill up both lanes. But God said, I'm going to come through and I'm going to kill all the firstborn, but if I see the blood applied, I will pass over. And so ever after that, children of Israel have been celebrating Passover. Passover. And when Moses did that, by faith, that's what I'm getting at. By faith. How do you think Moses, when he applied that blood, do you think he, I don't know if God's going to come in or not. I'm going to put some blood here, but I'm worried. No. I believe Moses knew beyond a shadow of a doubt he was going to obey God, and he put the blood there, and he rested in that. And God passed over. Through faith and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land. Got to the Red Sea, and here was Pharaoh's army. He had changed his mind. He was coming after him again. And there was faithful God put a pillar of fire at night and a cloud by day. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land. So let's learn that about from Moses, that we need faith in God. No matter what you're going through, I don't know what you're struggling with. I don't know the big things in your life. But have faith in God. He is the eternal strong one. He's the one who always was and who always will be. He is the eternal contemporary or the eternal I am. He is. It's not one who was, not one who will be, but He is. He is, and He will be with you. And we can trust Him. I get amazed at God, and I thought about, and I forgot then, I wanted to bring a little ball. And I remember the book of Psalms, several times it talks about God humbling Himself to look down on earth. When I think of that, I think of a little ball that God would see. We saw from only 36,000 feet up, and you go on up farther, and finally you see the whole. And as high as God is, I don't know what size of ball it is, but I like to imagine there's a little ball here. This is the earth, and somewhere on the earth, there's this little place. At first, it's filled with 3/4 of it is water. Look on your globe. It's interesting to see all the water. But somewhere on that globe, there's a land. And you'd make just a little mark on your ball. And that's the United States. Oh, that's us. We're a pretty big place. You start driving it, and you know it is big. But on this little ball. But we're not on the whole United States. We're just here in Georgia. And somewhere in this little mark, on this ball, we mark Georgia. Well, we don't fill up Georgia, do we? We're just in Lawrence County. And so we make a little mark down here in Lawrence County. Well, we're not in the whole county. Oh, yeah, right up here in Buckeye, there's this little building. 119 people in it. That's us. And that's what God sees from up there. He's looking down. And by now, I hope you feel real small to think that God humbles Himself and He looks down. And He sees us. and he loves us and he cares about us. And we can be like Moses and have faith in him. Whatever your future, whatever God calls you to do, whatever he wants you to do, say, Lord, I believe. I'm going to follow you all of my life. Don't use the first 40 years of your life to learn to be a somebody. And where you have to go through a period of your life learning to be a nobody. And finally, the last 40 years of Moses' life, he learned that God was more important than anybody. May God bless us. Let's just bow our heads for prayer.